Hello and welcome to the EG Property Podcast, and the first in a series of very important and very serious discussions we'll be having about the planet and the destruction of it, and what role real estate has to play in helping slow or hopefully even turn back the clock on climate change. Today, people around the world will join a youth-led campaign to strike for climate change. The global movement is the start of a week of global action. In our world, the real estate world, that action starts with the announcement of a very special commitment by some of the biggest leaders in real estate, and with EG's launch of a very special, and I certainly hope very powerful, sustainability project. That is all followed up next week with the World Green Building Week, an annual campaign that seeks to raise the awareness of green buildings as one of the most effective means to addressing climate change, creating sustainable and thriving communities, and of course in driving economic growth. But that's enough from me, and I'm really pleased to say that I have in the room today with me three of our partners on this new sustainability push. Sarah Ratcliffe, who is Chief Executive of Better Buildings Partnership, Ed Gabitas, who's Founder and Director of Avora Global, and Louise Ellison, Head of Sustainability at Hammerson. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
So you're joining me for this podcast, which I've titled Hope or Fear, How the Built Environment Needs to Approach the Climate Challenge. And that's not an unchallenging title for a discussion. But I guess we should start off really setting the scene of why we've come together to talk about this. So, Sarah, I wonder if you could start the discussion telling us a little bit more about the Better Buildings Partnership and this really wonderful commitment that you've got from your members.
Sure. So we're all about hope at the Better Buildings Partnership. We're a not-for-profit organisation, and we have 30 members who have just over £250 billion worth of assets under management in the UK. Our objective as an organisation is to support those members in improving the sustainability performance of their assets. So we're very pragmatic and very solutions-oriented organisation. The commitment that we're launching came about as a result of a dinner that we held with numerous CEOs and CIOs from our membership, where they heard from eminent climate scientist Professor Chris Rapley. He outlined the scientific evidence around around climate change and showed us through a really series of engaging graphics how this might play out over the years to come. And it's fair to say that following that, there was a very palpable kind of sense of urgency around the discussions that happened. And one of the things that came out of that dinner was that those CEOs and CIOs felt that as a property industry, we needed to take collective action. And that is why they asked us at BBP to help draft a climate commitment that they could all sign up to demonstrate their leadership to the industry and to drive market transformation.
And so what does that commitment say?
Well, it says a lot of things, some of which are quite complex. The underlying driver for this is based on the climate science, which tells us that effectively, based on the scientific findings of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that we need to keep global warming within 1.5 degrees. Otherwise, we're facing a situation where we don't know what will happen in the future. And so our climate commitment acknowledges that and the need for the property industry to essentially contribute by limiting the emissions from its building to net zero by 2050. So that's the underlying principle. Following that, there are a number of commitments that the signatories will be undertaking over the coming years. The first and perhaps the most significant one of those is to publish their pathways to net zero carbon. And they're going to do that in 2020. Mm. So within a year or just over a year, they will have all published how they are going to address climate change across their portfolios to stay in line with that net zero by 2050 scientific target that we need to meet. There are then a series of commitments about exactly what those pathways need to cover. So they need to cover both new and existing buildings. Mm. We can't just focus on the new and shiny. We have 80% of our buildings that we need in 2050 already exist today. So we must address those. Absolutely critical. They're going to look at both embodied energy and operational energy or carbon. And essentially what that means is this isn't about the energy and the carbon that's emitted as a result of operating the building, but it's also all the carbon that's generated through the development, refurbishment and straightforward things like replacement of equipment and so on. So it's very much addressing that. And the third, and perhaps one of the most critical elements of that, is that it's going to look at the whole building. So those familiar with the industry will know that property owners are only responsible for the direct emissions that they can control. And quite often, that's a relatively small proportion of the overall carbon footprint of the building. So these net zero carbon pathways that they're publishing will be specifically looking at the whole building. And obviously within that, there's a strong emphasis on the need to engage with occupiers.
They are a massive commitment. So that's phenomenal to get so many people signed up to that. Well done. Louise Hammerson is one of those signatories. It's a huge commitment, and to have those pathways in place by next year, that means a whole lot of work going on. Can you talk us through a little bit about, I guess, why Hammerson is committing to something that, you know, is going to be very challenging, and what it means for the business, for you, I suppose, as head of sustainability, and importantly for shareholders.
Well, Hammerson launched net positive commitments 2 years ago. So we're well on this journey anyway, in terms of achieving actually slightly more than net zero, because what we have to do is actually get to less than zero. Doesn't matter if it's just 1 kilogram of carbon, but it just needs to be less than zero. So so we've made a lot of progress on this anyway, and we understand how challenging that is. Our commitments are out to 2030, and again, include all of our operational, but all of our scope three, all of our tenant emissions as well. And to go back to Sarah's point on how much that is, when we did the footprint for the business, the tenants are responsible for between 60 and 70% of the emissions from the portfolio. So if you are running properties, if that's how you're making your money as a business, you can't really say, oh, well, everything in 70% of the portfolio is nothing to do with me. There's somebody else has got to be responsible for that. So our business and my board were very kind of supportive of the idea that actually we needed to work to make sure that we were including all of that, and we needed to address this quite fundamentally. There are a number of reasons why we decided to do that as a business, and why we, you know, my chief executive and my board have been very supportive of the idea of actually of this commitment and the commitments we've made previously. It's very clear, if you're a long-term holder of real estate assets, we're having a big impact on the environment. We can't continue to emit the amount of carbon that we're doing as a society and as a global economy. So we're going to have to do something about it. For a business to operate efficiently, you need to be looking at what's coming down the track, not just what's happening today. So we're very mindful of those things that are coming in the future, and we want to be able to put things in place to actually deal with them, manage those assets in an efficient way, and without being disruptive to the way the business operates. So this is just very basic, sensible business management reasons why we would want to do this and why we've started doing this. In terms of kind of the shareholders and all of our stakeholders, and we work with all of our stakeholders around this, shareholders are seeing risk in their portfolios, and they want to know that the companies that they're invested in, I mean, Amazon is a large listed company, as people know, they would need to know that the companies they're invested in, A, understand the risks that are being presented by climate change, and are B, in a position to actually do something about it without it affecting, you know, badly affecting their income in the short term and in the medium term. So you need a managed program of work to be able to deal with this. And Sarah's right, and you're right, it is really hard. It's very complicated. Buildings are complicated. You know, we've got, we've said, we've got something like 80% of the stock is existing. These are old, complex, very expensive assets. Mm. So everybody needs to work together to try and deliver this. So we work with our suppliers, we try and work a lot with our tenants, and we can probably come back to a conversation about tenants. And that stakeholder group, because this is a difficult challenge, but it's one that we absolutely can't shy away from, and increasingly, particularly our investor shareholders, are expecting us to deal with.
Fantastic. I definitely want to come back to that chat about tenants and responsibility. I think that's probably a quite important word. And also about the issues there are with the existing stock. I think it's very easy, isn't it, if you've got a blank page to make something sustainable and...
Not necessarily as easy as you might think.
Easier, maybe, than existing. But it will definitely come back to those. But Ed, just want to get some input from you. Evora, you're obviously consulting with a lot of the industry on what they can be doing, what they should be doing. You've got software and tech that you are able to use to help people on their journey to being better buildings. Can you talk us a little bit through what you're seeing in the marketplace and what actions businesses are taking or should be taking?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we've been operating for 8 years now, and there's been a significant shift in the last sort of few years in terms of the number of people that are starting to address this issue, but also amongst the leaders, the amount of work that they're now doing. Just as a bellwether, you know, we've grown sort of 70% year on year for the last 3 years, and we're seeing the amount of investment being put into making buildings better grow, you know, 5 to 10 times to what it used to be, sort of five to ten years ago. So the appetite to look at this is increasing significantly. And going back to the hope and fear sort of moment, I think the real driver is actually in the fear perspective. So people, you know, can see ESG as an opportunity. I see it as a significant opportunity to demonstrate the value in a building to investors. But it's the risk of not taking action that's really driving the market now. And I think that's being fed by two areas. You've got the things like the youth movement seeing today from the bottom up, which is very good from a public perception. But it's the top-down pressure. In the lack of very clear policy as well. So this is actually driven by the market through people like Better Buildings Partnership, the Climate Commitments, but also initiatives like UNPRI, GRESB, that have raised the importance of taking action on climate to the board. And this has really sort of raised the profile and it's raised the rate at which people are taking on board ESG strategies.
And what are those risks? What if we all just sit back and say, let's not worry about it? If particularly in our industry, what happens if we don't do anything?
Then our assets over time don't produce the incomes that we're expecting them to produce. They become much more difficult to run. So if you're just looking at real estate, at retail assets, I mean, obviously retail is Hammerson's thing. So if you're trying to get people you need people to want to come and be and stay in a shopping centre, you need to make sure that you be able to make sure that environment is comfortable. You need to be able to make sure that you can actually provide the energy to maintain that environment in a cost-effective way. So, you know, with the risks we are as an industry looking at are things like energy pricing, the actual continual supply of energy. We've got massive pressure on our electricity supply grid at the moment. So all of those things are happening. Plus, we're looking at, you know, we've done a climate risk review of our whole portfolio, a physical climate risk review of our whole portfolio. So you're starting to look at actually significantly increasing peak temperatures. We've already seen very high peak temperatures this summer and last summer. We've seen very, you know, it peaks in things like snowfall, which we wouldn't have expected before. These things are happening more regularly. So you start to see the assets struggling to provide the kind of environments we want. And the same thing will happen with office buildings, where it becomes increasingly difficult and increasingly expensive to keep them as spaces where people are able to spend significant amounts of time. You lose productivity. So assets become less popular and you start to see that drag on your NRI. Mm-hmm. As it becomes more difficult to run them, and then in some instances you're going to get assets which you simply can't insure because of the, you know, if you're looking globally, you can't insure assets because of the flood risk there, that or the risk of fire that they are then subjected to because of changes in climate.
Now, are we having enough of that conversation around the financial impact of sitting on your hands in this? Because I think, you know, sort of, We've had green discussions or sustainability discussions before, and then you know, the global financial crisis happened and it seemed to go very, very quiet. We're in a period in the economy where things might look a little bit dodgy again, but we can't afford for people to say, well, I'll push that down the list of priorities, can we?
I think it's partly to do with where those discussions are taking place. Mm. And I think in the past, those discussions have taken place behind closed doors within companies who have taken this seriously and known that they have to manage the risk, but not necessarily that they've had to share that. And I think one of the trends that we're seeing at the moment is partly through pressure from investors, but also other stakeholders. There's a huge movement towards much clearer disclosure on climate risks, and that's driven things by things in the investment world like the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosure, which many of our members are going to and will have to comply with, and that's bringing those risks out into the open. And what happens when that happens is that the conversations start to happen in public, whether that's with investors or with communities or with visitors and occupiers of the assets. So it's very much we're entering into a different phase now. So no, we haven't been having those discussions very much, but now we're having to have them as an industry out in the open.
Well,
and I think that's really important.
Ed has been having that discussion a lot.
Yeah. A long time.
For a long time. There's a lot of people who've been having that discussion. Yeah. But yeah, it has become much more mainstreamed. And, you know, when my sort of conversations with Chief Executive David, he's seeing it much more in terms of those conversations with shareholders when they're out and talking to investors. There is this expectation. And yes, with a company like Hammerson, this is part of our corporate offering. This is what you get. We have managed our sustainability and had a very strong sustainability strategy for a long time. But those conversations are much more regular. And I think everybody, certainly around the BBP table, is finding the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think the one of the key changes, so the disclosure is definitely helping from a portfolio level. There's certainly going to be a need to look at the asset-specific reporting. There's a risk that there's a lot of good work going at the portfolio level, investors looking at that gradual improvement in scores that we're seeing in terms of process. There's now a need to really change that process into impact and really focus on the performance of individual assets. I think that's where the disclosure is going to be key.
Yeah, so I'd just like to pick up on that. Thanks, Ed. Really good lead-in. One of the things that's also included in the commitment that many of our members are making is a commitment around disclosure. And there are two really important parts of that, one of which is that they're going to report on their progress towards their zero carbon pathways. But the other critical issue that Ed has picked up is that they're also going to be reporting their asset level performance. So we're helping to drive that disclosure with those signatories who will be signing up to that. And we hope that that will provide much greater transparency with the industry, which will enable people to effectively compare not only their strategies and policies, but also at a very sort of hard-nosed way, their performance at the level of individual assets.
And that's an important one because traditionally that's been incredibly difficult and it still is difficult. Yeah. Getting data for individual assets, particularly if you are only directly managing a relatively small portion of the energy that's going into that asset, getting data and getting robust and reliable data that you are confident about publishing, that's for a long time being a very difficult thing for our industry to do. And there needs to be a number of different players coming to the table to actually make sure that that's working properly. And I think this move to transparency that the climate commitment will push, I think starts to then make businesses think much more specifically about actually what is that data, where it's coming from, and actually demand that we are getting better data. Because the data is out there, it's just not necessarily out there in a format or in a system that we can actually get access to easily. It requires quite a lot of conversation also with our tenants.
Which brings us to two things I'd really like to discuss. One, that responsibility, who takes it, is it shared responsibility? And then how as an industry we work together to bring all that data into a usable format to share all that data and not put our hands around it and say, well, you know, I'm doing this and I'm going to make my portfolio great, but you do your thing. We, you know, how do we get an industry to unite on this for the greater good of something much bigger for the planet, for the future generations?
I mean, I think property industry generally, and particularly around sustainability, the property industry is quite unusual in the fact that we do work together. Even though, I mean, we're competing businesses. I mean, the 30 members of the BBP, the members who've signed up to the commitment, we all kind of operate in the same space and to some extent compete, and we'll trade stuff with each other. But we do communicate well, I think, as an industry. We work together pretty well. So that's something a huge advantage that we have. And I think there's that sense that this is something that we're never going to be able to solve without collaboration because it's so complex. So we have to start working together and work together more, if you like. So I think that there's an open door. I don't think there's going to be too much of an issue about that. There will obviously always be some limitations on terms of what we're willing to publish and what we're willing to disclose. But that once you've got that line of the sand, as everybody's going to put that level of data out there, then it stops being, you stop being nervous about it because everybody's doing the same thing.
Sure. I think it's really important just to think about the practical elements of gathering that data. And if we talk about sort of two different ends of the scale, the meter reading at the building and the investor in one of our members' REITs or PropCos, we talk about data like it's the panacea. Mm. But actually what we need is very much all the way through that kind of those chain of actors from the meter read to the investor. What we need to do is gather that data and make it useful to them, to the person on the ground who's got to maybe change the set temperatures at a building level, to the investor who's looking at his investment portfolio and trying to think about, you know, exactly, you know, what questions they need to ask of the companies they're investing in. So data is really challenging to gather, but we can collaborate to do it. But it's really important how that data is communicated and what we're trying to achieve by communicating that data. It's really important to improve the efficiency of the buildings at a building level, but also important to give the investors the information they need at that level too. Yeah,
I think that's true. And that data issue is a really important one. The person who's on the ground trying to manage the asset and understand the operation efficiency of that building day to day, yes, they will have day plus one data, so everybody can see in our assets what energy is being used on an hour by hour basis for the previous 24 hours. Our investors do not need to see that. If they can, if they want to, but they really don't need to see that. So actually, when we talk about data, as Sarah says, it's this big thing that's probably going to solve everything. But we need to be quite careful about actually understanding who needs what and what that should look like and how we manage that process.
How does it look, Ed?
I think, yeah, just to echo that, it's kind of, you know, data is only valuable when it allows an informed decision to be made and then action to follow up. And there's so many challenges just in the, you know, the infrastructure that we've got. UK is quite well advanced in terms of smart meters, data availability. It's less so in parts of Europe and around the world. So getting that data is one thing. Being able to have the tools to then present it back to the people on the ground, but then also their skills and awareness of what to do with that. So not having to wait on a specialist, you know, BMS engineer to visit once a month to change the set point. You know, how can you automate? How can you make buildings more intelligent to do, you know, quicker, more appropriate sort of changes?
So this brings in, I guess, the other evolution that we're seeing in property, which is tech, I suppose, which enables the smart buildings, the smart places to do all that. So there needs to be collaboration across divisions of real estate as well, in terms of, you know, the sustainability needs to speak to tech and they need to speak to investors and all that sort of stuff. We do need this wider collaboration.
They do, and it has to be everybody's responsibility and everybody's job. Mm. Traditionally, it's everybody's responsibility but nobody's job, so nothing, you know, it's my job, obviously. But that we do need to, and I think in a lot of businesses, you've seen that shift where the facilities management team and the assets get it. And we can see from some of the industry awards and that there is a lot of motivation, but it can still seem relatively niche. Yes, this building that we have, this one an award. Well, every building that you have needs to be doing that in the same way, and everybody who's every facility manager, every property manager needs to be understanding how this building, and needs to be thinking about why you've got these spikes in your energy consumption. It needs that kind of real kind of it shouldn't be passionate. So it comes back to your thing about is this fear or is this hope? It needs to be business as usual. And there is an element of, there does need to be an element of fear in that. But I don't think fear necessarily is a very kind of constructive way of looking at something. It needs to be seen as something that people are kind of hopeful and positive about doing.
Yeah.
And that needs to be the sense that people have. It needs to be business as usual because this is part of my job. This is what I want to do when I go to work every day.
I think that would be a great place to get to, wouldn't it, if this is business as usual, you know, this is just how we do it because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think, I was going to say, all buildings, have technology, you know, so the new technology is very important to innovate, to look at new ways of working, better ways of working. But it's important to remember that all buildings currently have technology and it's understanding how to use that technology appropriately. You know, don't forget the basics. So similar to, you know, with design for performance, making sure there's that flow through from the design stage, that people have a correct handover, that the site teams know what systems are in place, that the tenants know how they can operate their systems within their demises. It's very important to not forget the basics before sort of running away with the top end sort of innovative tech.
Maybe slightly less intelligent systems sometimes.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big challenges that we've already identified in this discussion is the existing building stock. And we at Better Buildings Partnership, we gather data from our members every year to understand exactly the performance of those assets over time. And, you know, in quite a lot of these buildings, again, it's not necessarily a huge application of tech. It's just getting the buildings to work better. And over the last 6 years where we've gathered data across our members' portfolio, we've been able to demonstrate that our members have achieved a 26% reduction in carbon intensity across the portfolios where they submitted data. So the first thing of that is it's not necessarily to do with tech. You know, then there's probably a bit of tech in there. It's not necessarily to do with innovation or new stuff. It's just about getting the buildings to work better. The second thing I'm going to do is slightly challenge what Louise said, which is that, yes, this should be business as usual. But if we're going to get to that net zero by 2050, we need to significantly ramp things up. In order to meet that target. So yes, the systems and the process and the way we work definitely should be part of business as usual, but the target we're aiming for needs to come closer and we need to work more quickly towards it.
Business is extraordinary, maybe.
Yeah, but I think, absolutely, of course we need to work much, much faster. And it comes back again to that kind of fear or hope. And is it, you know, are we going to end up with it's just too late? There are a lot of extreme things that will happen if we don't resolve this. So there needs to be a kind of element of fear about that. We don't want to be in that situation. But at the same time, we need to kind of make sure that people understand that we can do this, because otherwise you kind of switch people off, and that we can actually do much more than we have so far. That's what we need to do, and we need to be setting that challenge out. And because we've been, I think, as globally, I mean, within our sector, I think we've been relatively slow in actually really picking this up and running with it for a whole host of different reasons. But yeah, we can certainly do much more. But I think in order to actually get and deliver on those targets, to get those higher standards achieved, it does need to be business as usual for everybody across. That's what the, you know, those targets are the things that they need to be doing every day. That's the sort of stuff they need to be focusing on.
I think
on.
It's interesting to kind of get people to think about how is this going to be achieved. So it's a significant target. It's not going to happen through business as usual. That it needs to become part of business as usual. But the processes of getting there, you can look at energy efficiency, tenant engagement, doing, you know, some small-scale fit-outs. That will help to a point, but it's the deep retrofits of the existing buildings. Thinking about the buildings now, we're going to have maybe, you know, one, two sort of key opportunities to do those really significant deep retrofits. And that needs to get into the mindset of the asset owners to start planning ahead, planning the capex, so that by the time they do that, fit out in 10, 15 years, by the time you get to 2030 beyond, you're well on course for net zero.
So how do we change that mindset? Is the industry going to do it by itself, or does it require government to force mindset change by more legislation?
Look, I don't think it's an either or. There are, you know, essentially all parts of society need to make a contribution to this. We have seen the government step up recently and essentially declare that it would like Britain to be a zero carbon economy by 2050. That's really important. We've seen businesses like our members step up to take action. We see investors taking action. There's huge opportunity there. And we see what's really interesting at the moment is that climate change in particular has a sustained presence in the media. And that public concern and movements like Extinction Rebellion, like Greta Thunberg, are capturing the hearts and minds of people. And that drive is really important because it's those people that work in the offices that visit the shopping centres. So that's really critical. And going to the hope or fear thing, you know, I'm an eternal optimist. I'm hugely optimistic and very excited about our sector. You know, buildings are the bedrock of our society. We spend 90% of our time in buildings. They are not inherently unsustainable like perhaps some other sectors are. So it's a really exciting time to be in this sector, for investors to attract investment, new kinds of investment. We've seen a huge amount of growth in things like green bonds and trillions of dollars going into sustainable investment across the globe. And it's a huge opportunity to attract and diversify our investor base as an industry. It's a huge opportunity to get involved in some really exciting buildings, whether it's the new ones or whether it's deep roof retrofit of existing buildings. And that's much more exciting for the people working in this industry. They've got a huge amount of skills, you know, our engineers, our property managers, our agents. And it's a really exciting time to work in this industry. And personally, you know, I'm really buoyed up by the potential of this to make our sector a really attractive, exciting place to work and somewhere that can really deliver value to all its stakeholders, including its investors, but also the future generations who will inherit those assets in time.
I think that's a phenomenal place to round up the podcast. I think we could carry on for a long time, but as I said at the beginning, this podcast is the first of many discussions. I think, you know, there's more to be said around the role that tenants have to play in delivering sustainable buildings. We've only just touched on the surface of the 80% of existing buildings there are out there and the challenges and the opportunities that come with them. So I hope that we will gather back in this room many times to dig deep on those. But I think I'm certainly very optimistic and hopeful with all that we're doing together here in this room, all that the industry is doing around sustainability, that there's something that just feels like it's clicked recently in the hearts and minds of everyone, and particularly in our industry, in retail, that actually we can do something about this and we should do something about it, and we are going to do something about it, and that fills me with hope. I always love a bit of fear because I'm a journalist, but I think hope is a great place to start. So I hope that more and more people sign up to the commitment. I hope that we hear more and more voices, we see more and more action, and I hope that you will all come back and join me again to talk more about the wonderful things that we can do in this great industry that is real estate. But for now, Sarah, thank you very much. Ed, thank you. Louise, thank you for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.